there's every chance that number nine will go towards the ball quite a lot and drop in and become more like a 10, and the two wide players might fill the space.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello everybody and welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name's Clayton.
And my name is James.
And we're back. The transfer window show returns the summer of 2024.
Yeah, and it's going to disappear again for about 4 weeks, actually.
I was trying to hype it up there.
Yeah, no, you did well. It's just the way the schedule's worked out this year with me taking a week off and when the season starts and correspondent week, etc. It's not something we can put into the schedule every week, unfortunately. But I want to do something now, and I think we'll do a couple of bits like right as we get towards the window to introduce, obviously, new players and new signings to you. We have done a podcast on Patreon already where we've gone through the majority of the new signings. What I wanted to do on this podcast was go into a bit of a deeper dive into players that I think the majority of us haven't seen. So I came up with a list of players and a bit of a checklist as Clayton's like, would you know about these players? And both like, yeah, not a lot. So we figured that if we didn't know much about them, that would probably be the case for most of the listeners and the viewers as well. So we're going to go through, I think, 11 of those players here on this. Although firstly, I'd like to mention Daichi Kamada. Oh, who's joined Crystal Palace. Yeah, him. Japanese international, who I'd spent quite a bit of time looking at last night. And I was like, hang on, I've seen this guy play loads of times. I'm going to have to take him off the list. He is actually the Planet FPL Slayer. Scored against West Ham in Europa League, Tottenham in the Champions League, and scored twice at the Emirates in Europa League as well. So Daichi Kamada, the Planet FPL Slayer. We won't talk about him anymore. Clayton, you're going to kick us off. Who are we going to be talking about first? Yeah, mate.
We're going to South America via Brentford. Igor Thiago, who I think is on the radar of a lot of FPL managers at the minute. He obviously hit a brace in pre-season, which got a lot of people's attention. But his is quite an inspirational story, actually. I'll get to the kind of football profile side of things in a minute. But yeah, he's had quite the journey, and I still find it so weird when I see players born after the year 2000. So born in 2001, so he's 23 years old. Unfortunately, he lost his dad when he was only 13 years old, so I can only comprehend what his journey's been like. But he is proper, like, he's worked his way up. He was a bricklayer and now he's at Brentford. And I think for a lot of people in South America, they kind of aspire to either play in the top tier in Brazilian football or get to the European leagues, right? So to make it to the Premier League with everything that's gone on is outstanding. And his profile seems very exciting. I feel like it's maybe a bit of a lazy analysis from me here, but kind of South American profile forward, I always just assume they'll like defend from the front. They'll really work hard. And what do I do when I don't know a player? I go to FBref and I look at their player profile.
And, I knew you'd do this. That's why on the players I've looked at, I've not. Because I knew that you would for your players. So I didn't want to do the same thing as you.
So I've only done it for players that have actually got a substantial sample size of minutes played. But I look at his kind of defensive work. He's in the 96th and 99th percentile for tackles and blocks, which for a centre forward is pretty impressive. And even his goal record is impressive. So he obviously, people may not know this. He won the league with Club Brugge last season, and he also won the league in the last 3 years in total with Ludogorets, winning it twice there as well. He played twice for Ludogorets in 21-22, so I probably am cheating by getting that accolade in there.
So. Yeah.
But
John Terry shin pads moment there, mate.
That is John Terry shin pads level. But in 22-23, he made 32 appearances and scored 22 goals for them. 22 starts, scoring 15 goals for them. And last season, in 21 starts, 26 appearances, 16 goals for Club Brugge. And statistically, you look at him, his kind of non-penalty expected goals is pretty good. Kind of 0.48, 0.49 a game. So for the nerds in there, they'll know what that means. For the people like who don't really like stats, it basically means he's very good at getting into good goal-scoring opportunity areas. And his take-on success rate is good. He is a high-touch in-the-penalty-area player. His progressive passes received is very good. So the way I interpret that is he puts himself in good positions to be able to receive the ball that have come from deep and potentially link up play. So I'm excited to see him. He's really exciting profile. Whether he plays with Tony or as the lone number nine is yet to be seen or understood, but exciting coup for Brentford. And I think they're just someone as a club, I just really rate the way they do business. So I'm always quite excited to see our players that end up at Brentford and Brighton pan out anyway.
Yeah, we're going to talk about a couple of Brighton players in a bit. But we do always say that, don't we? When Brentford and Brighton sign a player, we have a little bit more interest rather than some of the other clubs who might buy players at that sort of area of the table, if you will. Although Brighton and Brentford have been quite far apart over the last year or so. I guess the ultimate question here on Thiago is, I mean, he's been given a number nine shirt. You mentioned about maybe playing with Tony or on his own. I mean, I guess the ultimate question is here, as discussed yesterday, we think Tony will probably still go. Is this lad good enough to replace him?
Again, from the limited, I've watched the odd YouTube clips and obviously saw his goals in pre-season, but I've largely gone on statistics. Yeah, on that, I think so. And I don't know if there's anything in this. I'd love to see statistically if this actually means anything, but when I see someone taking the number nine shirt, I feel okay, they're going to get substantial minutes. So I would say yes, personally.
Okay. That's really interesting, actually. So it could well be the central forward for Brentford going forward. Okay. I'm going to talk about a couple of the Manchester United signings. I think they might only have two so far. Lenny Yoro, firstly, has obviously gone for a really big money from Lille. I think the maybe the most expensive player now of sort of 18 or younger,
Wow.
as it stands at the moment. His is a quite an interesting story of how much he's played for Lille over the last couple of years. Paulo Fonseca was his manager at Lille. Fonseca's, excuse me, has now gone to AC Milan. But 2 summers ago, Yoro had made a really late appearance, really late in the season for Lille as a 16-year-old. And he was obviously really beginning to impress in their younger age group teams. And he joined up, there was a decision made for him to join up for first team training with a lot of other young age groups. We see that a lot with even our own clubs here, don't we? Young players, 17, 18, train with the first team, first couple of days of pre-season, and they kind of get narrowed down, and most of them go back to their lower age group. On the first day of training, it was agreed with Fonseca and the management team. He just said, no, he's not going back down. No
Wow.
chance at 16 years of age. So in that first season, he was basically was their fourth choice centre back. I think he played 13 times for them. And by the time we've got into the last season, Josh gone, he's started the season as a 17-year-old first choice, basically playing every game. This is a really, really good signing for Manchester United, I think. I think mainly because it's a real change of profile of the type of player they've been buying. How many times have we said over the years, you know, United have bought this player, and yet, great, that plugs your gap for this year, but that's going to create you another problem because you've got a player on big salary who's coming towards the end of his career. I've used the Casemiro example, but there are lots of others that they've been stuck with pretty much over the last 10 years or so, where I think Manchester United have not invested in youth as much as other clubs do.
Yeah.
I think Manchester United are aware that they end up paying a premium on players because they are Manchester United. United fans think there is a United tax. That's fair enough. And you might make the case that that tax is applied here on this particular transfer. But every big club, and I mean the biggest clubs, the Madrids, the Barcas, Liverpools, they all wanted this lad.
Yeah.
He's a right-sided centre back, comfortable on the ball. Like anything, when you look for highlights and clips of these players on YouTube, etc., he absolutely does look like he's going to be the best centre back in the world. It's more difficult to find clips of Lenny Yoro mistakes, or that compilation doesn't quite exist as far as I've been able to find. The thing that struck me was he's very aggressive, he's decisive, he is like a modern day centre back who likes to step out. When I say step out, I don't just mean step out with the ball, I mean step out into players who drop into like the 10 positions. He'll go and be aggressive and step out into
Very
someone, which
front
is
footed then.
exactly that. You look at his dual numbers, really good, really impressive. The Virgil van Dijk comparison is there.
Okay.
Physical attributes, you can see similarities. He dives in a little bit more than, say, Van Dijk, but then he's a lot younger. And I think Van Dijk has obviously learned with his experience to do that a lot less. And that might be something that comes into Euros game. Right-sided centre-back's been a real problem for Manchester United. They've had Lindelof there, who's out of contract next year. Harry Maguire's out of contract, players we didn't mention yesterday. Maguire obviously played a lot more last year, but I think that's not Ten Hag's solution to the position. Left-sided centre-back is obviously solved when Lisandro Martinez is fit.
Yeah.
I think there's every chance that Euro will be Manchester United's first-choice centre-back. And you might say that's easy to say when they've spent 50-odd million quid on him, but he's 18 years of age.
Yeah.
But there's every chance that he'll go in, I think. And he's one of them you look at and you think, because of what's happened with him at Lille, once he gets his foot in the door, it'll be
He's
his
there to
shirt.
stay.
Yeah. So a question mark at this stage on whether he'd definitively start the season, but that's the plan. I mean, you look at Yoro and Martinez together and think, yeah, I could really see that as a good partnership, actually, that might be transformative for a club who, it's well documented, conceded so many shots last year.
Yeah, very exciting profile. I think if Man United fans can be patient, if he does play regularly, because at 18 there's bound to be mistakes.
Of course.
I think they're in for, yeah, that's an amazing partnership on paper. And yeah, I've seen a lot of comparisons, obviously, to Saliba, and Saliba at 18 was kind of on loan and stuff. So the fact that
Can
Yoro's
see that
coming
in him.
into
Yep.
the fact that he's coming into a club the size of Man United to play in the Premier League at 18, yeah, good luck to him. Sounds like a really exciting signing for them.
I've also bought Joshua Zirkzee, who we feel like we should have seen, and we kind of did see for like 1 minute against England in the Euros. It's worth saying though, his two substitute appearances at the Euros were actually his first caps for the Netherlands. So he was called up into the squad after they'd had a couple of injuries. So it was kind of a later addition. Did make me question when they're bringing on the likes of Weghorst how good this lad might be, but we know what Weghorst brings. But then again, do you know how tall Zirkzee is?
I don't know. I'm gonna guess 5'9".
He's a big boy, mate, and
Okay.
it doesn't stand out much when you watch clips and reels of him. He's massive, mate. He's
How
6 foot
massive.
four.
Jesus.
But when I looked at a goal compilation of all of his goals for Bologna last year, did really well. Unfortunately, that team's largely been broken up. Bologna is going to be in the Champions League and have lost their manager and Thiago Motta as well. Did really well. I think he scored 17 goals, I think, in all comps last year. Stands corrected, 14. When you look through them, there aren't, swing in the cross and let the big man get on the end of it. He's not that sort of player. And he moves really gracefully for a player of that size. Something really is distinctive in his finishing. He likes to feint.
Likes to what? Faint.
Faint. So,
Okay.
like, I'm going to strike with the
Yeah,
left,
yeah.
bring it back, and then do it with the right. Also, likes that a lot of his finishes looks like he likes to, again, he's going to shoot, he's facing the goalkeeper one on one, feint, round the goalkeeper. And it did make me think that this might be a player that becomes really frustrating. I'm watching a
Okay.
compilation of his goals and his best bits where he's feinting and he's scoring. Great, brilliant. Yeah, how many times have we fainted and someone's got to
Imagine the
tackle him
misses.
or dispossessed him? I'm always trying to do that when I watch clips on YouTube can make anyone look like the best player in the world. I've said before, when we signed Emerson Royal, I thought we were signing Cafu. When we signed Brian Hill, I was convinced it was Lionel Messi reincarnated
I
based on
was
what I've
watching
watched on YouTube.
a game week 39 highlights for a guy called James Linden. He looked amazing.
Yeah, I mean, you can make your own Andrea Pirlo comparisons if you wish. Unfortunately, the whole game exists on YouTube, so that's not quite right. Yeah, talented player. I think probably the question here is, does he displace Højlund up front? I'd suggest it's probably a no, actually. Højlund's been given the number nine shirt, and I would suspect certainly to start the season, he would still be the favoured starting first choice for Manchester United up front. But obviously, this lad certainly gives competition. Could they play together? Yes, I think Xerxes probably does have the ability to drop in and play a deeper role. But when you've got a player like Bruno Fernandes, I'm not sure you necessarily require that sort of thing. So, one to watch, not convinced that you'll go immediately in as a starter, though.
Okay. Yeah, exciting one to keep an eye on, though. Should I head on over to the next club?
Yeah, we said we'd talk some Brighton players, so go ahead, mate.
Yeah, I'll start off with Mats Wiefer, and E sounds like a bloody exciting profile. So I
Sounds like someone
some
who stinks.
no, that's me right now because I've been for a run this morning, and
Why are you telling everyone that?
no shame. E sounds like such an exciting player, and I think it's again like my. So I play centre midfield for my Sunday league team, and I think the way my brain operates, like, I love the managers that have ended up as centre. I just have a bit of a soft spot for these kind of intelligent players, but I'm surprised I'd never heard of him because there's this really, really good tactical website called breakingthelines.com, and I'd recommend anyone go and check them out. They're just a blog of supporters that are like super nerdy about football. And I was reading his player profile, and they did a player analysis on him on September 11, 2023. So it's clearly been in the news for a while. But yeah, I think Brighton have got a coup on their hands here. He's come from Feyenoord, so they finished second last season, obviously under Arne Slot, who's come into Liverpool. But he played 29 appearances and started all 29 of them. And even the season before that, when they won the league, started 18 games with another seven sub appearances. And he is a very cultured footballer. He's very comfortable on the ball, can receive it back to goal. Yeah, he's how you spoke about Xerxes with the feints, this guy does it kind of when he's about to receive the ball. So he'll kind of drop the shoulder, turn, pivot, and he'll go progress it on. So really
More of a sitting
exciting.
player.
Pardon?
Is he more of a sitting player? What are we describing him as? 6'8"? What are we describing him as?
I'd say he's a hybrid. I'd say maybe 6'8", then 8'6". But again, it's very limited sample sizes that I've actually watched him play in. But the interesting for me is like progressive passes. So he was in the 89th percentile for passes attempted, but the 94th percentile for progressive passes attempted. So not attempted, succeeded in. So eight progressive passes per 90, which I think is super impressive. And you can see then progressive carries. He doesn't really carry the ball so much. So he's in the 68th percentile for that. So you can see he's very much a kind of, I think, a 1-2 touch player, like really punch it through the lines quickly. I think from the little I've seen, he's got the ability to. We talk about people. This is the highest order of praise, but you've spoken about Luka Modric, where his pass selection will dictate the tempo of what you do next. I think this guy, he's very young still. He's only, well, he's 24, so he's not a baby, but I think he's got the ability to learn that level of tempo dictation and super exciting player, but even more so off the ball. So if you look at things like tackles, interceptions, blocks, even aerials one, he's so impressive there. He's in the 89th percentile at 93rd, 99, and 98th for tackles, interceptions, blocks, and aerials one in that order. So I know you've spoken about Brighton being a bit harder to play against next season off the ball, and you've done a piece on talking tactics on
They
Patreon.
were anyway. Probably the hardest under De Zerbi. Like I always said, if you didn't, they obviously had I guess you could say, sloppy second half of last season. But if you didn't, it didn't matter who you were. If you didn't prepare right for Brighton, you were getting beat.
It's but having described him, like he did get five goals and three assists, so eight contributions from centre midfield is a pretty good going. But I'm very excited to see how he pans out. Like I said, I can't say with confidence whether I think he's a six or an eight, but I think he's got the ability to kind of do both in a fluid system, which I think he'll get under the new manager.
Yeah, a few things I know just to add in, because he was before Sky decided to abolish their game. He was going to be a player who I was really keen on keeping an eye on in terms of price because of ball winning ability, actually,
Sure.
which is really interesting. You've spoken a lot about progressive passing and stuff. I've been hearing really good things about his off the ball work.
Yeah, that's what stands out.
He would have been in the Dutch squad by a thigh injury. So if you think, oh, well, hang on, he wasn't in the Dutch squad. He would have been in it. Bar an injury. And in terms of how his role is going to be at Brighton, I think, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how Hertzler defines what he wants of him as a player. I would think from what you've said, he might end up more of a six,
Yeah.
purely because what we know from what Hertzler did at St. Pauli is he'll start with a back three, but the central centre back goes into midfield. And it can be the fullbacks will push really high as well. So they'll quite often look like they're building in a two. And where a lot of clubs obviously create their box in the midfield, where fullback inverts into midfield, they create their box right from the back
Okay.
and quite often don't have like wide options because the fullbacks will push really high. There's two ways they can do it. They might even just build with a one, like a 2-1. And that would be the central centre back steps in as the six, and the central midfielders just go and disappear. From what you're saying on FIFA, that makes me sound more like the Brighton central centre back, which I suspect it might even be Van Heek. Something I really want to discuss with Sam Murray on Correspondent Week. Moves into say a right sided six, and FIFA drops to a like a left sided six and creates their box. I wonder if he's going to be that sort of player for them that
Sure.
allows them to get out. But yeah, the thing that stood out that I knew was ball winning potential.
Yeah, like I said, the metrics for him off the ball are absolutely outstanding. So yeah, really exciting sighting for Brighton, as well as Yankuba Minter. So had you heard of him before this window?
Yeah, I
Okay.
was aware from Newcastle people that there was a player who was out on loan who was doing extremely well at, ironically with Rafa in the Netherlands, and he might have well caught the FPL community's attention this week because of a goal he scored the other night for
You've
Brighton
seen
as
it.
well. Yeah, I have, yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. And for
Yeah.
people that haven't seen it, he's kind of drip nice pass out to him on the right, and he's kind of cut in. And he does that really nice thing where kind of pauses and he sits someone down and just
Composes.
waits for. Yeah. Really, really impressive player. But yeah, this I think was obviously Newcastle needed to sell to raise some funds for PSR. So it was an opportunistic signing at
Yeah,
ease. That
Newcastle
was.
did not want to sell him. That's really worth clarifying.
Yeah, big time. And he sounds like a very exciting profile. So he was at a club called Odense 2 years ago in the Danish Super League, and 15 starts, 4 goals, 4 assists. And like you said, he was with Wefa last season at Feyenoord, 17 starts and another 10 appearances off the bench. And he got 10 goals, 5 assists. And he is, how can I summarize him as a, he's a wide forward. I think he's predominantly going to play off the right. I think he's comfortable on both footed on both feet. He seems predominantly left-footed, but he's comfortable on both, and he's electric. His take-on ability and his dribbling is unbelievable from what I've seen, and even statistically, it backs it up. I'm going to hit you with the stats: progressive carries, successful take-ons, 99th percentile. So he averages just shy of 8
Jeez.
progressive carries a game. And he averages just over 3.5 successful take-ons a game. He's in the 99th percentile as well for touches in the attacking penalty area and progressive passes received. So again, he's someone that receives it in really good areas, is a high-touch, high-volume player. I think he is dangerous. I'm so excited to see how he pans out because they've got a lot of options there that can play there. But again, one thing is off the ball, people go mental for his pressing ability, and people like this. I was reading a BBC News article where they said the quote is, when he started pressing defenders, they were scared of him. He's lightning quick, and I think he's kind of got that tactical and yeah, that tactical IQ to kind of go and press intelligently with his raw speed and power as well. So he's got the technical ability, he's got the physique, he's got the power, he's got the manager to hopefully develop the tactical understanding even further. Super exciting signings by Brighton. And like I said, as a parrot, when Brentford and Brighton sign certain players, I'm one eyes open and watching. I think they're super exciting. So yeah, excited to see how they pan out.
Yeah, he's one of the players I'm most interested in seeing. It's worth saying he's 5.5 in FPL, and he could become someone that's really popular, I think. I even look, here's one for the FPL heads. Callum Hudson-Odoi is a player I've spoken about quite a bit. Forest have three great fixtures. Minter in game week 4 and 5 has Ipswich at home and Forest at home. You
Little
know, if
daisy chain
Minter
there.
impresses in the first three and then Hudson-Odoi is going to Anfield in game week 4, can see that sort of transfer. I think it's the psychology of FPL managers that probably don't want to be making that sort of transfer this year because the change in the rule to be able to roll, etc. You feel like, oh, I should be spending it more on the more powerful players or saving. I get that. It might really, really appeal. It's worth saying that it's only two games and then they go into Chelsea, Tottenham, Newcastle, so then a more difficult three. But this only is 5.5, and he's really going to impress. Keep an eye on him in pre-season. It's also worth saying, I think from what I'd seen, probably more likely to play on the right. I mean, the idea of him on the right and Mitoma on the left.
Scary.
To be
And
honest,
there's a Dingra there that we haven't even mentioned as well,
yeah.
right?
And Solly March, we think he isn't going to be back till sort of September-ish. So I think probably up to speed, might even be sort of November for Solly March. So there's real opportunity there for him to play that position. I think Odinga actually is someone who'd be better off the left.
Okay.
He obviously played on the right a lot last year, can play both sides. Minter from the bits I'd seen, probably more the right, I think. And yes, him and Mitoma could be a really dangerous duel. And one of the things that I highlighted in that tactical piece I did on Brighton for patrons as well is there's every chance that number nine will go towards the ball quite a lot and drop in and become more like a 10, and the two wide players might fill the space. And one of them might do really, really well this year. So they're well worth keeping a close eye on Brighton, obviously, anyway, with a new manager. I've got a few players I just want to give some brief details on. I was going to do a double up on a couple of players at Palace, but then realised that I knew Kamada much better than I thought I did. Chaddy Riyad is a new signing, centre back who was at Barcelona. I think he only played once for the first team. Went on loan to Real Betis last year, which had an obligation to buy him for a fairly modest sum, sort of 4 or 5 million or so. Betis obviously acted on that and then got tripled their money by selling him to Crystal Palace, basically. He's come in for around about 14 million euros, full Moroccan international. And really interestingly, I will tell you the player that he reminded me of when I saw him. And he must be very careful with this. I'm not saying he's going to be as good or anything like that. But in terms of profile, just how he looks, he reminded me of Gabriel.
Okay.
That was the player that sprung to mind. Again, kind of really aggressive in the tackle, but perhaps not super comfortable in terms of distribution. Like you don't
Yeah.
see Gabriel playing diagonals or kind of 30-yard vertical
No.
passes. He gives it to his mates, basically, doesn't he? But an outstanding defender. And this lad, Riyad, looks like he's someone who really wants to defend. Left-sided centre-back, I don't think he's gone to Crystal Palace to just go and sit in and not be a regular starter. Now, why I think it's important to bring him up as well is that he's basically Mark Gay's position.
I was just going to say that you said he's not going to go there to just kind of sit around. And I know you've spoken about potential interest in Gaye coming later on. Is that where you're going with this?
Well, I just think by virtue of being first choice starter for a team that got to the final in the Euros, that's obviously going to be on. I mean, Mark Gay's a player that would have been on the top club's radar anyway. So I'm not suggesting that he's going to leave Crystal Palace. And it's worth remembering, since Oliver Glasner came in and obviously they switched to a back three, Gay hardly played.
Yeah,
He actually
true.
played in midfield on the final day of the season.
I forgot about that. Yeah.
And I don't think there'll be an intention to use Mark Gay in midfield regularly. And remember, Palace will be boosted massively by having Cheick Doucouré back last year, who obviously had a real serious injury last year. So like Doucouré and Wharton in midfield could be a really, really nice balance and partnership. And Gay could certainly play right-sided centre back. No doubt about that. You could imagine Joakim Andersson, who's a real good distributor, who he really does like to play a diagonal and a direct pass. It could be that Gay played as a central centre back. But if Gay was to be the left-sided centre back, and Chris Richards, I think, performed pretty well for Palace last year, and Nathaniel Clyne was well liked as a right-sided centre back by Oliver Glasner as well. This lad's not gone to Palace, not the player, I don't think. It's just something to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to play a back three with three regular centre backs, you need more strength in depth. And I think it's worth saying Palace didn't have it. So it could well be that he doesn't start the season and gets progressed in later on, possibly. But as a full Morocco international, I'll expect that he wants to play. From Mark Gay, let me talk about Mark Gu. Well done, James. How have I managed to do that?
That was 10 out of 10.
Thanks, mate. Cheers. 5-star reviews, please. Smash a like while you're there. Young forward at Chelsea. I bring him up because obviously we spoke a bit yesterday about Chelsea playing last night and oh, what's Nkunku going to do? And of course, Nkunku scored, didn't he? But the lad that played up front ahead of him was Mark Gu. And I've watched bits of the game tonight. Mark Gu came to prominence as well known at Barcelona because he came on and scored on his debut as an 18-year-old last season. Came on, basically scored with near enough his first touch, which I think was a winning goal, I want to say, as well. He looks massively like Diego Costa. I don't know if it
does
was
he?
The,
I've not seen him yet.
Yeah, not as in the that face. I just mean in terms of his profile and his style. So I watched some takes on his performance from last night, this morning, and he makes very similar runs to Costa, where actually doesn't actually pin a centre back right back in. He drops a bit shorter and wants to spin constantly between centre back and full back. And when he does it, he obviously hasn't got huge pace. So he gets his body in the way and then brings other players into the game. He's only 18. I don't suppose this lad is going to play regularly for Chelsea, but it's worth noting that he obviously played last night as the nine. Therefore, Christopher Nkunku did not, despite scoring. Looked like Nkunku played more like 8-10 position.
Okay.
Which is where we think Keenan Dewsbury Hall might end up. Now, Chelsea might end up playing with two players like that. I bring Marco up because I know everyone wants to keep an eye on what's happening with Nkunku at the moment. And it's worth saying, this is the lad who played as the nine yesterday.
Yeah.
Chelsea have obviously spent money on him. Barcelona have sold a lot of kids. That's their lever pulling this year, maybe a legitimate one. And Gu will likely stay, I think, as part of the squad this year for Chelsea. But I obviously don't expect him to be first choice. This next player I want to talk about, I also am not sure if he's going to be first choice. Nottingham Forest has signed a new goalkeeper, Carlos Miguel. Now, Nottingham Forest, you'll be well familiar, have no interest in ever signing goalkeepers. They've signed how many since they were promoted to the Premier League? I don't even know. Five or six, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say five, yeah.
And this is an interesting one because do you know how many senior games he's played?
He's another one. I'd never heard of him.
So it's not many. He's basically only played 10 league games.
Wow.
For Corinthians. He's played, in fairness, I think, like a few Copa Libertadores games and stuff as well, and certainly some cup games. But his total competitive games he's played in his career is kind of like about 25. Really low. And Forrest have bought him for a modest sum, like $3.5 million, basically. So you're a backup goalkeeper. Not sure. And there's also a link here to Forest buying players from Brazil who've got not much competitive game time. Murillo basically was one full season in his career before going and joining Forest. And I think we can all agree Murillo is a fantastic left-footed centre-back who, again, a lot of the top clubs are really looking at, possibly even in this window. Although I suspect Forest are in a position financially where they can keep him and won't be forced to sell. That's my understanding. So Miguel is a really interesting profile. He is 6'8".
Jesus.
He is an absolute giant, and he looks it. Now, when you think of goalkeepers who are that tall, what do you think?
Pantilimon. That's the first thing that
Okay, Pantilimon.
Reflexes maybe not good, getting to the corners, bottom corners.
Yeah, exactly that. Except that's probably this lad's strength.
Wow, very flexible and agile then.
Absolutely. When you look at compilation, you're like, oh, he got down really well to that.
Like
and then gets back up really quickly and stuff. So really interesting profile of goalkeeper because really, I mean, excessively tall players like that, yeah, struggle with that. It's coordination when it's really low down to your body and stuff like that. It's actually a strength of his.
So you think there's a chance he could be going in to eventually be their number one?
I'm saying that he's playing the majority of the games for Forest in pre-season at the moment. Matt Sell's obviously been away with Belgium. I'm sure by the time we get to penultimate weekend of the season, we'll have clarity. But I have seen Matt Sell's in quite a few FPL drafts and that, and I'd be very, very careful of that, actually.
Sure.
Because Miguel may well be the first-choice goalkeeper for Forest. Think of Forest as well. We've got a patron, Frenchy FPL, who he's always on the case about how bad Forest are at defensive set plays. You've got a goalkeeper who's 6'8", and is going to come for you. That's going to improve a real weakness you've got in your team.
Yeah, that's intimidating. I know I would bottle a few headers if I saw that coming towards me.
You'd bottle a few headers anyway, mate, I should imagine. Talk to me about a couple of Villa players, Clates.
Yeah, so I think the last few you spoke about were potential starters and more depth options. I think these are the same at Villa. So we've got Enzo Barrenechea, and Samuel Illing Jr. I'll start with Samuel Illing Jr. because he's from our neck of the woods. He's a North London boy, so Islington boy, and he was in the Chelsea Academy for many years. I believe he signed with them when he was 8 years old. I may have
Wasn't
that wrong.
everyone in the Chelsea Academy at some point
Yeah,
or another?
fair point. But he's a young English forward. He's 20 years old, and again, I don't think he's going to be knocking on the door to start, but we're obviously with Diaby going and Villa in Europe next season. I think it's a potential depth option to, I think we spoke about on yesterday. I can't remember what pod it was, but Leon Bailey and whether he's got the kind of engine to sustain the heavy schedules coming up. So I think Illing Jr. is someone that may contribute minutes wise as a facilitating option. It sounds like from his profile, he's got the pace, he's got power, his dribbling ability is good. So I think low risk, like they obviously completed this double signing for just shy of £20 million sterling. So low risk, high upside with him. And Enzo Barinaccia, he is someone that's interesting. So I think when I, as much as I love going on FBref, I think there's certain players that I'm conscious to add a lot of context to. So I look at his profile, and he was at a team called Frosinone last season in Serie A, who finished 18th in the league. So I look at his metrics, and for context, he's a holding midfielder. His stats don't look great individually in terms of passes attempted, passes completed, progressive passes, etc. But I'm adding context to that. If his team finished 18th, I can't imagine they were a team that had the ball much anyway for him to kind of showcase his abilities. Coming to a team like Aston Villa, I don't think again he's going to start, but obviously with Kamara, who's got a long-term injury, and they're going to want to ease him in. They've obviously lost Douglas Luiz. I think again, similar to Samuel Illing Jr., it's probably just a depth option to cover with the added games coming in. But he's someone that off the ball, he seems very good. He's quite a front-footed midfielder in the sense that he's quite good at interceptions. He's positionally seems to be quite astute. On the ball, yet to be seen, but again, he's been in a team that I think I've made the assumption didn't have much off the ball for him to showcase his ability in that. But he's young, he's 23 years old himself. So I think there are two options that have come in to just bolster the squad with European competitions and a couple of departures in Diaby and Douglas Luiz, as well as nursing a returnee in a very talented Kamara.
Interesting. I think it's worth saying that Iropenham's left as well. So Villa were really light in terms of cover in if they wanted to play with a real anchor player, which you don't, but if they did and have particularly done that sort of later in games to shut down, we've occasionally seen them even use like Callum Chambers in that position. So I think it probably was a priority to get someone in that could play that sort of role for them. Little bit of a cheat here because I've seen Illing Jr. play before. But only as a substitute very late in the game at Benfica in the Champions League a couple of years ago for Juventus. They were 4-1 down and he came on and he made a real impact. And the game finished 4-3. Actually, I think he assisted one of the goals from across. And it was quite quickly from there. A lot of the English clubs had obviously then got attention to him because he's an English lad, right? About potentially bringing him back over and stuff. So I'm not surprised he's come back to the league. But since then, I don't think he's kicked on in the way people might have expected. And again, I don't see him going straight in as a first choice starter for Villa, even despite the departure of Moussa Diaby. We'll finish with a new Manchester City signing, because I've been saying for the majority of the summer, Manchester City badly need to refresh this squad, despite being the best team in the league. And they've signed a player who you will see on FPL as Savio Moreira de Oliveira, known more commonly as Savinho, because if you're Brazilian, you've got to have
Cool name.
you've got to have a ho on the end, basically. Very talented player, only 20 years of age. His journey's quite interesting. I'll get back onto that. He's already won 7 caps for Brazil, including the goal scored, was part of the Copa America squad. So this is, potentially first team ready player. I looked at some clips and I first straight away just thought of Riyad Mahrez, who I think it's fair to say was probably a bit of a miss for Manchester City last year. Yeah, that ability to, he really wants to take people on and drive at people, that left footer on the right hand side who wants to go and get at people. And we think he might have even be picking up the number 26 shirt at Manchester City
No
as well.
way.
So if that's true, the comparisons are going to be there.
Do you think he'll actually come in and contribute significant minutes then? He's not just there to kind
It's
of.
full Brazil international, so I don't really see why not. But what's interesting about his journey, he's essentially been a Manchester City player for, well, 2 years already, basically. So this is interesting. This it's a nice way for people to end this podcast, and people can make their own conclusions of what is. So he'd made sort of 20 appearances for his club Atletico Mineiro in Brazil, and then he was bought by Troyes. Troyes now in the third division in France, I believe. Technically wasn't really signed by Troyes. It was signed by the City Football Group and assigned to Troyes, if you will. Never played for them. Not a single appearance.
What was he doing that year?
He went on loan to PSV Eindhoven in
Okay.
Holland. He only made six appearances for them in the Eredivisie. He played for their under 21 team a number of times as well. And then went on loan again last year to Girona, who you may know are also part of the City Football Group. And obviously, Girona had an outstanding season, have qualified for the Champions League. Unfortunately, much like with Bologna, a lot of their, yeah, a club like this gets in the Champions League, it's a real shame. It's kind of been getting asset stripped quite a bit. Girona, we think, are going to complete a deal for Brian Hill, ironically, who I've now managed to mention in this podcast twice. He might be the Savinho replacement. I would suggest that's probably a major downgrade. And City have now obviously paid Troyes £32.5 million to sign Savinho permanently. But when they own Troyes, who are they paying?
I don't know. It would
It's
have
a
been
little bit
themselves,
dodgy, isn't
wouldn't
it?
it? Yeah.
And listen, let's not pretend other clubs haven't done this sort of thing as well. But yeah, it's a payment to, if they own twice, paying themselves, aren't they?
Well,
And
yeah,
obviously
to be.
helps this team that's obviously hit now the third division in France. Let's give them what sort of injection to now begin to improve that football club. It's interesting,
Yeah,
isn't it?
like you said, it's all part of the City Football Group, right? So, yeah, I think you said the right words. Let people make up their own minds on that sort of stuff.
As people will with the potential 115 charges, which is absolutely no chance of us covering at any point during the course of this season. Remember, nothing's going to happen to at least the kind of the end of this current year, in terms of even kind of court case, etc. We'll leave it there. I think Savinho is very capable of becoming the first choice player for Manchester City. If they play this lad on the right and Doku on the left, you're going to get one or two games where
Ball and doesn't touch the
You're gonna rip the shit out of the opposition. I think you're probably also gonna get a couple of games where they become very, very frustrating. Yeah, he's a full Brazil international. He's certainly gonna compete for a place in the team.
Nice. Sounds like an exciting player.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for that. Always enjoyable. As said, we will do a couple more transfer window shows in late August when we're coming towards the deadline, etc. Tomorrow, my Ask James stream is at the later time than usual of 6 p.m. UK time. That's because I'm on dad duty because my son has now finished his first year at school. Technically, I'm partially on dad duty now. So join me for the stream tomorrow, and then it's a week gap before Correspondent Week, which will kick off on Monday, August the 5th, with our Gooner correspondent, Adam Pritchard. As ever, guys, be nice to each other. Cue music, please, match up.
Fantasy Football Show.